Hi, everyone. Christian and I welcome you back to Mondays with Mindy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show.
Today's episode features a conversation with comedian, actor, musician, advocate, and artist, Margaret Cho. Very excited. Favorite. Yes. The San Francisco native has been named one of the 50 best comics of all times by Rolling Stone magazine, and rightly so. Doing stand-up since the age of 14, Margaret came to national notoriety in 1994 when she created and starred in the ABC sitcom All American Girl, about a nonconformist Korean-American girl with liberal views and her very traditional conservative family. She followed this up with groundbreaking off-Broadway one-woman show, I Am the One That I Want. After a smash hit national run and book and film, she launched into Notorious Margaret Cho with an even larger success and a Showtime special. Shows, specials, and tours that follow include shows called Revolution, Beautiful, Psycho, Show Dependent, and Mother. Most recently, Margaret is touring her show Fresh Off the Bloat, and that will continue into most of 2021. In between these tours, Margaret never stopped working in television, notably starring in 6 seasons of Drop Dead Diva on Lifetime, blowing audiences and judges' minds in her season of The Masked Singer on Fox, episodes of High Maintenance and Law & Order SUV. Her feature film turns include Faith-Based, Friendsgiving, and Over the Moon. Also a Grammy-nominated musician, Margaret has released albums on her Clownery label that includes a plethora of collabs. I first learned of her musicianship and amazing singing voice on her special Show Dependent.
Nice.
With all her success in her creative life, Margaret has always found time and energy to devote her voice and talent to anti-bullying and gay rights campaigns. Most recently, she has launched her own podcast, The Margaret Cho. Very cute. Get it? The Margaret Cho. I found that adorable. I mean, I'm taken. Her common co-host is her ridiculously adorable dog, Lucia, or Lucha. Awesome. We'll have to find out.
We'll find out.
It's Lucia.
All right. Shall we welcome her into the show?
I would love that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is our pleasure to welcome the fabulous Margaret Cho. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Hi.
Very happy. Very happy camper here on this end.
Yeah, very happy to see you.
Yeah.
So we start each conversation with, I go out of my Johnny Adler jar and just 5 random questions. Ooh. Christian and I kind of came up with questions and it's just a way to just start gabbing.
Yeah, get to know you.
Okay.
Okay?
Perfect.
So, here we go. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the best advice you've been given and who gave it?
It was Joan Rivers. And she would say, always going to want you. If you're funny, doesn't matter. They're always going to want you. And it's like, I found that to be true, you know, that it's the one thing that really endures. I mean, show business is such a weird landscape, and then you never really know what to do, like what's going to happen. But I found her advice to really be, I don't know if it was so much advice, it was more just like an assurance to have come true.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, more than good. I'm going to take that too.
I love her as well.
Margaret, what assumption do people make about you and they're wrong about it?
I like leopard print. For some reason, every time I get a gift from somebody I don't know well, it's always leopard print, which I mean, I don't dislike it, but it's not something that I go out of my way to use or to wear or to see. I don't know what it is, but there's something about leopard print. I think it's maybe a kind of a John Waters thing. Maybe it's kind of like a female treble, John Waters, Divine, or anybody that likes gay men immediately is going to like leopard print. It's like the next best thing to a gay man is leopard print. But I don't know why that is, but that is very often the case if I get something.
That is fantastic. I can just tell you that my Granny Rose, who was the lead salesperson at the Furrier department at Saks Fifth Avenue, wore leopard every day.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's a fun fact.
She fits in all those categories. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. That's fabulous.
Who is your favorite relative and why?
Oh, my favorite relative is my aunt, She was called Kunimo. So she was like the big aunt. That's what that name is the big aunt. And she died actually quite a few years ago now. But she was really tall, which is unusual for a Korean woman. She was like over 6 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
And she had a really big, hearty laugh. And she was very wealthy. And so every time she would move her hand, it was like rings and all this jewelry. And then she would just get so overly excited when she'd see you. She would give you the jewelry off her hand. So I have a lot of her jewelry. And then she gave it to me when she died. I inherited it all. And it's so like all the rings are really massive. Like they could be like bracelets. Like she was a giantess. And she was just really fun. And even her death was really crazy because she was in Chicago and she was trying to go home to Korea to die. And so she got on a plane and died mid-flight over Seattle. So they had to emergency land the plane. And like, if she had known, she would have died of embarrassment. Like she just doesn't want to cause problems, even though she was just very bombastic and very extravagant. So I mean, I love that whole, it's like almost a stereotype of a crazy aunt, but she was that, you know, and I always sort of aspire that. She was a very wealthy wife. She married a bank manager or a bank, I don't really understand, but he had like hotels and resorts and golf courses in Korea. And she has a lot of children and like a very, she was like the last era of marrying into wealth. From my family. Now we don't do that anymore. Now we just marry down, but, or I do anyway, but it's more like she was just that kind of an era of a woman. Like she was, her heyday probably was with the 50s, 60s, that time.
Now this is a little naive on my end, but did you call her the big aunt because she was so tall or is that more of a common Korean thing?
She was the oldest. So it's the common Korean thing. It's like, they all have titles. Like you, at a certain point in your life, you stop using somebody's name. And you give them a name according to where they are in the family or who your daughter is or who your son is. So, you know, like that's a, just a Korean tradition, but she was also physically very large. So that's part of her legacy.
Wow.
That's cool.
Margaret, when was the last time you cried?
Oh, gosh. I probably cried maybe 2 days ago, because I always watch a lot of Korean dramas and part of it is like crying. It's like comedies where you laugh, but like they actually make TV shows so that you can cry to it. And they have like different like sort of breaks in it so that you only cry for like part of it. You know, they have like the cues of like the music and the rain and the memories and whatever. And
how smart. That's like so cathartic.
Yeah.
Genius.
Because we're very shut down as a nation. So we try to like find those emotions through our entertainment. That's why I think Korean entertainment is so popular all over the world, because it gives these emotional outlets, whether it's K-pop or Korean dramas.
Totally. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
What do you do when you are stuck creatively?
I just take a break. I take a break and I do something different. Like I'll cook or I'll bake or I'll do something that is sort of like not around the thing that I'm working on. So. Whatever that is, I just kind of take a moment to just do something for myself, whether that's dehydrating some apples or feeding my sourdough starter or, you know, if I'm stuck creatively, sometimes I get stuck on food like, oh, I don't know how to make this and I'll order tacos.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you write every day?
No. But I do write. It's never set, but it's always a kind of thing. Like I'm also starting to draw. So I'm trying to do a little bit of like animation and trying to think about like what that would look like. And so I'm drawing these different characters. So there's like different things of writing that I would do. And then I always take notes. So it's never that much of a sit down writing, like a thing. It's not a practice in that way, but I'm constantly putting it to paper or putting it in my phone, at least, you know, just so that I remember, or drawing it if I have.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Do you come up with the names of your shows and then write, or vice versa?
Both. It's kind of like you write it to create the show, or you do it after the show's finished. And then you go, oh, I think this is called this. But since I haven't been on the road for so long, like I don't even know what a show would look like now. I haven't done a show since March. I mean, I do them online, but it's a different feeling.
I was just going to ask you how it's going with your latest tour. I mean, I'm calling it a tour because it is.
Yes. Yes.
How is it?
It's super weird because I've never taken this much time to not be on the road. I've been touring for 35 years or something.
Amazing.
So yeah, that's crazy. It's very strange to not have that experience, you know, to have so much time where you're spending on stage and working. And, you know, there are times in my life where I've gotten on a plane like 3 times in one day to go to different shows, like to do 4 different shows.
Amazing. So
it's really bizarre to not have any kind of movement. And so I do things online. I do different online shows and different events. I did one yesterday for the inauguration, which was really satisfying.
Yes.
I mean, I spent a lot of this past, like the end of last year, doing a bunch of, you know, work for the Biden-Harris campaign, which is really wonderful. I'm so happy. It was really gratifying yesterday. My favorite was Lady Gaga.
I mean, it started with the gown. I knew she would deliver with her, the pipes. I mean, I had no doubt in my mind. Yeah, it was kind of obscene in the best way possible.
Best way. Yeah.
It was so fulfilling. Like, yeah. She looked so happy too. That was also part of it. There was so much joy in everybody. And then, you know, my favorite thing right now is the Bernie memes.
I mean, Margaret, I can't right now. It's so hilarious what people are coming up with. And he is just a meme waiting to happen anyway.
I know. I love him. He's so cute with his like Burton snowboarding jacket, which I tried to buy.
Did you really?
I'm like, oh my God, I have to knit those mittens.
Yes.
I have the mask already. I have to buy that jacket, but it's sold out. Because it's a jacket. It's like a snowboarding jacket, of course, because he's so young at heart. Like,
oh, yeah.
I love it. And so that was really, I mean, it was just all really great to see.
Yeah. I was also just so impressed that he, given the pomp and the circumstances and the respect, and rightly so, it's like cold and I'm going to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Thank you.
What do you expect? Of course. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's so great.
So great. What did you do?
I was doing a lot of outreach for, especially with the Asian American community all over the country, and, you know, doing things with Ted Lieu and doing things just all over with different parts. Like Michelle Kwan was sort of the, she was sort of the liaison for all of us. And so I voiced a lot of animation for different ballot instructions. So I had a little ballot that it was like smart. Schoolhouse Rock. And for every state, for the mail-in, I did a different animation for different people, like rules and laws around what envelope you put it. So that was a major thing.
Major.
Because people, you know, if you made a mistake, you only, some states don't have a way to correct it, you know, so everybody had to do it their own way. They have to do it like 50 different ways, but it was really worth it. And I'm so glad we got to do that.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome. I'll say. Yeah. So outside of all the politicking, what have you been binging on during this time, or have you?
There's this really good Korean drama show, which I only watch Korean dramas right now. I started with a couple of years ago. I'm really like adapting this Korean drama for American television. So it'll be kind of like the first K-drama that's come over for American TV. And so, but with Asian Americans. And so at that point, that was a few years ago, I started to really get into the world of K-dramas, and they're so involving. And so right now I'm watching one called Voice, which they just started the 4th season, but there's 3 seasons. 2 are on Netflix. It's Voice 1 and 2. Okay. And there's a Thai version that I haven't watched yet, but I'm going to. But it's about this woman who is has super sensitive hearing. And so when she's a 911 operator, and so she can hear what's happening in the background and almost psychically locate where they are. And it's so gory. Like, it goes far beyond any kind of American television, like how gory it is. It's kind of like, in a sense, it's almost like Saw. You know, it's like horror.
Oh, wow.
It's like that level.
I was going to say Sopranos, but like, no.
Yeah. No, it's so beyond the level of like crime that we're used to for procedural. It's a procedural TV show because every episode is like, you know, a different thing that happens, but they're so gory and so visceral that ignites. I love a horror theme anyway. I'm a very real horror queen. So that is like really appealing on so many levels. And so, but my favorite thing about the show is that every time anybody says something, she goes, "Moragoyo," which means, "What did you say?" So it's like, you have super hearing, but anytime anybody says anything in front of you, you're like, "What?"
I literally want that to be the hashtag. I already see the t-shirts. That's hilarious.
So good. It's really so good. So I really love, I love K-dramas because I'm learning Korean better.
I can find it on Netflix.
Voice is on Netflix. Voice 1 and 2 is on Netflix. Okay. And Voice 1 Thailand is on Netflix. And Voice 3 is only on demand Korea. And Voice 4 is not out yet. So it's very, it's very good.
I'm going to do a deep dive, Margaret. Literally,
it's
great.
It's mostly like dark web crime, which I think is really crazy. Cause I'm like, is that even real? Like, but I don't even know. Cause I mean, I always forget my passwords to everything. So I can't even imagine anybody would, how did you make it on the dark web? Like, I'm like, oh my God, aren't you going to get a virus? Like, it's like, so I don't even know how to use the computer. So it's very strange that anybody could do the dark web, but they do. Yeah. And so it's very interesting.
As Christian knows, I am technically Amish. So I am truly fascinated by anything computer related. Cause I just think you're a genius anyway to even start it.
Right. It is. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. And also really terrifying, to be quite frank.
It's very terrifying. And it's really, I mean, it's like, who knew that this was going to be the future? Like, I'm so bad at predicting like technology and what it can do. And, you know, we're so lucky now that we have the internet. Because what if this was the 70s or, you know, even the 90s? It would have been just impossible to do any of the things we're doing now. So this is good.
Yeah. Agreed. So do you have, which is really kind of the basis of why Christian and I started this show, I have to ask. So do you have a creative process? How do you even define that? Do you not? Because you do so many different creative things well.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Well, it's a lifelong journey. And I think that the creative life, like an artist's life, is never apart from work, you know, because you're constantly inside of your work. You're constantly building your senses and your memory bank, and everything that happens is part of work. So it's never, my creative life is not separate from my regular life. So whenever, if I've ever feeling blocked, I'll go into a different kind of creativity or cleaning something out. So that's a kind of, or I'll look for adoptable animals on the internet.
I mean,
just a fantasy adoption.
I'm borderline obsessed.
It's
with your, I call her a person because she's a person.
She is like a little, she's a little person. She thinks this is her interview right now.
Of course.
And, you know, she's being interviewed. She's going to be so mad because in 2 weeks, I have two cats that are going to move in. And one is deaf. And the other one is her assistant because she has to have her litter mate guide her around because she's like not used to being alone.
Of course.
So, and so she's going to be so mad, but she's going to love them.
Yes. Yes. We're telling you, you're going to love them.
I think she'll love them.
Yes.
She'll love them. So now that I've been spending a lot of time creating like cat environments, because I've never had cats. So I've been rescuing dogs for like 30 years. So this is my first cat experience. So they're all different. They're very, very different and they need different things. So I'm catifying my life.
Well, and you have gone into the deep dive into the deep end with this deaf who has, oh my gosh, it's a twofer.
Her service cat. Yeah, it's her service cat. So but crazy. Supposedly it's easier to have two than it is to have one. It's like dogs. It's easier to have two because their cats are also, they're not exactly pack animals, but they do need a kind of a pack. So
yeah. Oh, I don't know a lot about cats. I have to be honest. I am more of a dog person, whatever that means. I don't mean to discriminate.
Yes. No, they're all wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. I just love animals.
So Margaret, I want you to talk a little bit about your trajectory, because one of the reasons why I'm so besotted with you and have been is that there is this trajectory you've gone on that where no medium is off limits. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a sense of reinvention, which I love. I don't like to use that term because actors, I mean, I've been here. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Reinvent. Yeah. But you seem to say it's that improv thing of you always saying yes, seemingly to me.
Yes. And you have to. Yeah.
I'm wondering how that's changed as you've gotten older. How do you find the business of show as you get older?
It's really expanded. You know, I think that it's gotten better actually as I've gotten older, because when I was younger, it was so different. Also, show business was different. I mean, you know, when we were starting, there was only like three networks.
Yeah.
You know, that took a long time to expand to four.
Yeah, exactly. So, four was like, it was like an earthquake.
Yeah. And then, so now there's so many places where you can work and so many different mediums you can work in. And there's so many different things. I think they always need critical voices, comedic voices. Everything needs to be heard and seen. And so I find it easier as I'm older to kind of be there for it, you know, and I'm learning more and like I'm expanding my musical vocabulary. I learned to play the synthesizer, and I'm working with the Moog grandmother, which is really hard to use to me. It's really, I thought it was a piano, but it's not. It's like super weird. So now I feel like expansive musically. And then, so now,
what is
like,
that,
I think,
what does that make for you? Is that like instrument number 9 or 10 or something?
Well, the guitars that I play are cheap because I play the guitar, the mandolin, the ukulele, the dulcimer, the mountain dulcimer. I play electric sitar, but they're all fakes. They're all 6 strings, so, or 12 strings. So they're not, they all have a guitar neck. Like I have a cello with a guitar neck. They're all fake. Ooh. So it's like, if you play one instrument, you can kind of fake your way through the entire catalog of stringed instruments. If you play guitar, you can figure out everything else. It all sort of works out. It's like when you have the calluses, it'll work itself out. And the piano is my first instrument. So the piano is really the one that I know the best. And so that kind of leads you into like synthesizers or the accordion. And none of these I play well. It's just to me, like I can play them enough to hold a tune and sing with it.
Well, hi, that's playing it. Okay. Yeah. In my language.
That's playing well to me.
Yeah. That's my language around.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
And again, not to blow smoke, but you also, which is unusual, have this gravitas. And do you have the desire to do drama if the opportunities present themselves? Because I think you would hit it out of the park.
Yeah. I would love to. I'm still waiting for like that kind of like Lifetime movie series. Like I would love what like Meredith Baxter did for like Lifetime. You know, I would love to do like the series movies or like Stone Pillow. Did you see Lucille Ball in Stone Pillow, where she's like a woman who lives out on the street? And it's like I think it's like a TV movie.
It was. I think it was ABC TV movie. Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. Or like Lace with Phoebe Cates, where she's looking for her father.
I'm loving these references.
I love a mini series. Now they call it limited series.
Limited. Because right, exactly.
It's got Meryl Streep's in it. Like it's very, you know. But before it was like the Thornbirds or like Shogun, you know.
Yes. Same. So I'm looking for my misery. I mean, I don't want to do misery, but I would like to play a psychotic.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
We should do, you know what we should do? We should it's do necessary. A women's prison movie.
Okay. So on my bucket list is I'd like to be in a horror movie where I die violently.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would love a violent death.
Yes.
In movies.
Yes.
I am dying to do an all-female Western.
Oh, that's a great idea.
A la Blazing Saddles. I'd like it to be a comedy.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Oh,
yes.
I love that.
Now you have just added to the list of a women prison movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Screw Orange is the New Black.
But period piece, like 1950s.
Yes.
So that would be really fun. Like a noir, even like 40s. It would be really exciting.
We might have to call John Waters. That seems
I think
to be
so.
Like, yeah.
That'd be perfect.
That would be perfect. Very good.
I love that.
So with 2021 here, and all things considered, things are, we're on a definite positive project, you know, trajectory. There goes that word again. Are you wanting to go back on tour, back on the road? Does that seem like this time next year a real possibility?
I hope so. I mean, I hope so, but I also want people to be safe. I feel like we've been fed so much misinformation from, you know, the orange thing and so much crazy racism and so much crazy violence. And, you know, like, I just think that it's really like, we've got to get through this virus first. And I'm so excited about the vaccine. I don't have it yet, but I want it so bad. So I just love any kind of injection. I know it's weird, but I do love an injection. So I'm very excited.
I definitely am one of in the camp of like, I'll get in line and I'm ready for it. Yeah.
Can't wait.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Can't wait.
For sure. So what are the biggest lessons you've learned? I know that's a really broad question, but
I think that when you, if you worry about, like, I used to think that worrying was somehow a way to safeguard my future because that I've already been through the terrible thing that I think might happen. So I anticipate the terrible thing before it happens so that I can rehearse the pain.
Yes.
And to realize that that doesn't actually work.
Yeah.
But you can't really prepare for pain. That pain is pain because you don't expect it. Part of the painful experience is the unknown coming for you. And so the best thing to do is just assume the best and enjoy what you can. And I think that's the sort of a key to life and key to living is that there's no way to anticipate what's going to happen. And that's one of the beautiful things. But I always try to control it somehow. By imagining the worst. That's why I like horror movies because it takes the dread for, it does the dread for me so I can just sit back and relax and just watch the death unfold.
Not to be horrified.
Yeah. Yes. Like I just want to watch the death unfold so that I don't have to imagine it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, I have always reminded myself because I come from a family of worriers to break the cycle that worry is not an action verb. And you know, I've had to really kind of like 12 step myself in that regard and remind myself this is not doing anything for me. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I really appreciate that.
It's true, though. It's very much like a thing, like it's taken a lifetime to learn it. Because I do, like, I fall into these patterns of like wanting to worry about things and thinking that's going to help, but actually doesn't do anything.
Are you a regretter of the past, or are you really good about like past is past and I'm moving forward?
I think I've definitely gone through periods where I was a regretter, but now, I mean, I'm so happy where I'm at in my life that, and everything that I've done has led up to this. So I try to focus on the joyful things that I have because of all the decisions I made. So, you know, that's a really important thing, but yeah, I can definitely fall into the regret camp.
Interesting.
It's not a good camp. It's like, I'm not, I need to pull those tent poles up.
Yeah.
And move this tent out of regret camp.
Yeah. For me, I use them for like acting stuff. Like I can bring up shame very quickly, like a little too quickly.
Yeah.
But I've learned not to live in it, you know, as I've gotten because older. So
it's like you realize too that life is so brief and so fragile and we don't have that much time if you think about it. So it's good to just sort of like enjoy what we have.
Yes. Well, for one, cannot wait until I can purchase a ticket and go into a theater again and see you live because
I love it.
One of the best and one of the joys of my life has been seeing you live, I have to say.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, well, you're always on the guest list from now on forevermore.
Oh, well, geez, then this was worth it. I mean, oh my God, forget that we like had this conversation. That was worth everything.
Yes. If I had known you were there, I would have been so excited to just have it put you right in the front. I mean, you know, that would be the best.
Oh, I'm one of those people that just like, you know, I pay and I go. You know what
well,
I mean?
I love you.
Oh my God. Adore you right back. And thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
For coming on and gabbing with us. We
thank
just
you.
Simply adore you.
I adore you. Thank you.
She's ready to wrap up the interview too. She's like, all right, mom.
She's ready.
Yeah.
Oh, I had to say, I was thinking about you so much because I shot a movie in October in Poughkeepsie. And I was like, Eastland is right over there.
Hello, right around the corner.
I know.
Poughkeepsie.
We're so close.
That's
We're
so random.
Close. I know. It's so funny. Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, one more time, let's give a big round of applause for our very special guest, Margaret Cho.
Thank you. Lucia says thank you.
Oh my gosh.
She had a good time.
I'm obsessed with her.
This episode of Mondays with Mindy is brought to you by the Woodstock Way Hotel.
Attracting musicians, artists, dreamers, seekers, and bootleggers since 1787, tucked behind a waterfall along a babbling brook, this Catskills contemporary hotel sits just steps away from Woodstock's iconic town center. Its sustainable and conscious design, paired with a nod to local flavors and peerless hospitality, will lead you to embrace a way of life here, drawing you in to live, love, and listen. Woodstock Way Hotel. Head to woodstockway.com or mondayswithmindy.com for more information and to book your reservation today.